Welcome to the Esri and the Science of Wear podcast. This was one of our highest rated episodes, so we're playing it again in case you missed it.
The Mississippi River is America's most important inland waterway. It's a lifeline that moves essential commodities to market. When the water level drops, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers must dredge the river's ports to keep ships moving. And that comes with a big price tag, says Ned Mitchell, research civil engineer at the U.S. Army Engineer Research and Development Center. Mitchell manages NavPortal, a digital twin of the river's ports and channels that monitors conditions and analyzes vessel traffic. That means they can anticipate costly shipping bottlenecks and delays.
Even a modest percentage improvement, right, is tens if not hundreds of millions of dollars. That's millions of dollars just to transport these dredges between locations.
Esri's John Lenihan explores how a real-time dashboard maintains the flow of essential goods along America's second longest river.
Welcome, Ned, to Esri and the Science Aware podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Before we go any further, can you just tell me a little bit about your organization and the center that you work for within the Army Corps?
Sure. So we are known as the U.S. Army Engineer Research and Development Center, or ERDC, as we're often called. We're headquartered out of Vicksburg, Mississippi, at the Waterways Experiment Station, which has a long history, I guess almost 100 years at this point. It's a consortium of Army research laboratories. I specifically work for the Coastal and Hydraulics Lab, but we have six others that are focused on other aspects of the Army's overall mission space. And so we overall, ERDC is, I think, 2,000 plus scientists and engineers from all over, specializing in all kinds of different engineering disciplines that relate not just to the Army's mission, but the broader Department of Defense and even support to other agencies and academia. So really a broad range of activities covering just about every engineering discipline there is, maybe not all, but close. And one of those main areas of support is to the Army Corps' Civil Works mission. And so these are the things most members of the public are familiar with, right? Maintaining ports and waterways like we're discussing today, but also flood control, ecosystem restoration, even a recreation function throughout the country.
I read up a little bit on the Mississippi River, and I didn't realize how many ports there are, nearly 60, and all the work the Army Corps of Engineers has to do to make it usable for transportation. Can you tell us about the importance of this waterway to the U.S. and more broadly?
The thing to remember is that it is a massive engineered system, right, at this point. Sure, there's obviously a natural watershed there to begin with, but we, for over a century, have been conducting infrastructure projects, waterway engineering activities to keep that system reliable throughout the year so that we're not completely at the mercy of the elements in order to get grains to market and things like that. 50 ports, I think, throughout the watershed, but you really need to think of it as a distributed system, right? A lot of these ports are dozens of terminals that might be spread along dozens of miles of river, for example. So it's not pinpoints on a map necessarily. It's more distributed. Maybe a conveyor belt might be a good analogy to think about how commodities come from the heartland, grain, obviously in the fall, but you also get a lot of upbound fuel shipments, fertilizers, chemicals that are needed for various industrial sectors throughout the interior of the country. So it's a wide mix of commodity types, you know, to supporting a lot of different industries. Down at starting at Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the things really shift to more of ocean-going commerce, and you get a fascinating exchange of the barge traffic that's come down from the hinterland, interfacing then with these ocean-going ships, either at the dock facilities and the industrial corridor that really is the river from Baton Rouge to New Orleans. So it really is the connection or the gateway to the kind of America's breadbasket, if you want to think of it that way, right? This sort of natural access point, albeit with some significant engineering involved as well. I guess the one thing I haven't mentioned are the lock and dam facilities. So I think we've got 60 plus of those on the Mississippi and the Ohio and the Illinois rivers that all converge. And so those are, you could think of them as staircases or escalators, right? This is where natural geographic terrain leads to naturally shallow spots in the river that wouldn't be open for navigation year round. And so the locks then essentially hold the water levels at a constant level for several miles up until the next lock. And so it, you can think of it like a staircase. And so navigation can work its way reliably all the way up to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or St. Paul, Minnesota, year round, right? Traffic closes in Minnesota in the winter for obvious reasons. But that notwithstanding, the locks provide navigation reliably throughout the year.
So it's this massive engineered network that kind of runs up the center of the country. Can you tell me about bottlenecks on the river and how that happens and kind of the impacts?
So when you get to kind of the open river free flowing state, that is when, you know, obviously the water level fluctuations throughout the year can occasionally, when they go low specifically, present problems for the operators, the vessel operators. And so, you know, a flood event happens that tends to shift around the sand waves, the underwater shoals into new locations. It might shift the naturally navigable channel that they're used to using. And so when conditions go low, suddenly there's a shallow spot, right? A choke point, bottleneck. To get through there, these operators may need to wait on another surge of water to, you know, from upstream precipitation to work its way down the river. That could take days. They may need to light load cargo, you know, go over with shallower barges. But if they do that, they're not going to be making as much money, or they may lose money. And the third option, which we had to rely on just last year, is to get the Corps to mobilize dredges or contract industry dredging vessels to come up and remove the shoals through dredging process.
So it's not only the river that has seasons, as you kind of indicated, but the freight being moved across the network also spikes in the fall when it's harvest time. So you have to be ready for that, and the river has to be ready for that. You created a digital twin to deal with these changes. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Sure. So yes, you're right. During harvest, obviously there is an increase in traffic because this is, you know, time sensitive. You need to get these commodities to market to be cost competitive. It may not be quite as significant as people think. You know, there's quite a bit of storage capacity for grain as well throughout the country. But yes, generally speaking, we see seasonal spikes in different commodities. And grains bound for export certainly being the most significant. The digital twin, we have a platform that we're calling Nav Portal, which is short for Navigation Portal, and it's a combination of capabilities, data processing and visualization capabilities that we've developed within our R&D programs over the last decade plus throughout the Corps of Engineers. These capabilities have tended to exist apart, right? Just because we've developed them incrementally. We're a very mission-focused organization. So we set out to solve problem A, and we collect data and do analysis. Elsewhere, another team is solving problem B. But then when our waterway managers and our decision makers need that holistic view of things, it can become a challenge to have half a dozen separate tools and data sets, each addressing a piece of the big picture. And so Nav Portal is our attempt to combine all these into sort of one platform where all the relevant pieces of information can be kind of presented together so that decision makers are given more of the information that they need that's critical to the decision point. So digital twin is one way to describe this. You've got essentially sensors out there in the real world. Now, these are typically the key pieces of information that historically we have struggled to get into the hands of decision makers on a timely basis, right? If you're needing to know if you are going to mobilize a dredge, let's say, to address a shallow spot in the river on a particular day of the week, well, you need to know where that dredge is. You need to know its operating conditions. You also need to know the essentially the real-time bathymetric conditions. Where is that? You know, we've got survey vessels. We've got teams of surveyors that go out every day all over the country and survey the conditions in these waterways. We've tended to then process that data kind of at the local level. It stays at the respective district in their GIS shops. It can be sent throughout, but only if requested, right? And so again, it's been hard to piece together the full picture so that, you know, the waterway manager that's going to make the decision to pull a dredge off of one location and send it somewhere else knows everything they need to know to trust that that's a rational decision. And so again, with our digital twin Nav Portal, we've got the latest surveys automatically feeding into this system. We've got the dredges tracked in real time with our dredge quality management program. We've got other data sets that track vessel traffic and things like cargo throughput. And so that really is rounding out that picture, and the decision makers can see all the information they've typically needed to weigh these decisions in a single session. But we have within the Corps of Engineers, you know, I think there are 39 districts throughout the United States, generally organized by watershed, right? That's a logical way to do it. And each one of those have operations chiefs and business line managers and other project managers who help operate and maintain this big, massive engineering system that we've been speaking about. And so that's our target, our initial target audience, the ones, you know, kind of tasked with the day-to-day, real-time go, no-go type decisions. We've also got senior leadership at our headquarters and at our division level offices throughout the country who have to kind of weigh a lot of times these trade-offs. These are the leaders that will hear from project stakeholders, right? The general public, members of Congress who often approach us with questions about the things they're hearing from constituents about decisions the Corps is or is not making. And so we support leadership a lot with those kinds of questions and data calls as well to sort of trust but verify that what they're hearing matches conditions on the ground or underwater, if you want to think of it that way.
Obviously, the NAV portal helps businesses shipping and the customers and the goods that are being moved. But dredging is a huge demand on the Army Corps of Engineers. Tell us how this digital twin NAV portal is helping with that and how it's impacting kind of the cost and the efficiencies and in some of the dollars spent on dredging as an organization.
Sure. So I'm glad you brought that up. Dredging is the single largest activity that the Corps conducts as part of its navigation mission. And I guess by largest, I mean, we spend more money dredging than anything else, than on anything else we do. That's to the tune of $1.5 billion a year to maintain hundreds of navigation projects across the country. So there's a couple of things that we're able to use within NAV Portal to make that large dredging program more efficient. One of these is a system I mentioned earlier. We call it our dredge quality management program. And you can think of it as maybe having a Fitbit on each of our dredges, although it's much more complex than that. It's a diagnostic sensor array on every dredge vessel, either owned by the Corps or contracted by the Corps. To do maintenance dredging. And it's feeding data back in real time that sort of not just tracks location, but operating state and really lets us measure the challenge or the efficiency, however you want to think about it, of dredging operations at different locations around the country. So we can kind of get a sense of how intensive is the maintenance required to keep Project A open for navigation versus a project somewhere else. So that's a huge amount of information streaming in real time that's also being archived, which opens up the possibility of doing all kinds of data mining and analysis to overall looking for more efficient ways to maintain these waterways. The other thing that we're doing to, again, make this this large dredging program as efficient as we can is being more coordinated and deliberate with how we sequence dredging work throughout the year. So this is less of a factor, at least so far, on the inland system, where we still tend to have to react to fluctuating water levels, right? And kind of do the best we can there. But in the coastal setting, which is where most of our dredging money gets spent, hundreds of coastal ports throughout the country, obviously water levels don't fluctuate as much, right? You've got sea level and you've got tidal range for sure, but we can be a little more coordinated and we can schedule things a bit better in the coastal setting for dredging maintenance. Essentially issuing its own contract, we can look for opportunities where the same dredge could move in sequence between projects and do them in a logical sequence that avoids what we call environmental work restrictions. This is times of year when dredging is not a good idea at these locations because of sea turtles or other sensitive wildlife and habitat. And so we work with the resource agencies to ensure that we're dredging at a time of year that minimizes those concerns. And so you have to keep that in mind as well, because if you send a dredge to a project during a work restriction, then it's not going to be able to do its job.
So the dredge management activities you're undertaking now with support of NAV Portal, what have been some of the economic impacts of those changes that you've applied?
Well, so when you're talking about a program as large as our dredging program, I mentioned, you know, $1.5 billion a year that we're spending just maintaining this system. So that's not including deepening and expansion of navigation projects. This is purely the maintenance tail. Even a modest percentage improvement, right, is tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. And just the savings on dredge mobilization and demobilization, we call it, those are the costs incurred just to move these massive dredge vessels and their crews and all the support equipment and support vessels. I mean, that's millions of dollars just to transport these dredges between locations. And so again, if you're not coordinated with how you sequence the work, then there's a lot of extra travel involved, right? You can kind of envision that. So we're looking more towards these logical progressions so that, you know, dredges don't have to travel as far between projects. And even just the mobilization savings, we believe, could be on the order of $100 million per year by adopting this approach nationwide.
To be more efficient in your dredge operation seems to have a huge impact. So that's really exciting to hear. Thank you for joining me today on the podcast.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the ESRI and the Science of Wear podcast. And thanks to Ned Mitchell for explaining the vital role of the dynamic Mississippi River in sustaining our economy. If you like this episode, please share it with a colleague.